Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We begin on the eve of the Sochi Winter Olympics and get an analysis of how this big showcase event will play for Vladimir Putin at home and abroad, as the foreign press focuses on shoddy amenities at hotels and stray dogs, while the Russian press gushes with pride. Clifford Gaddy, a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and co-author of Mr. Putin, Operative in the Kremlin, joins us to discuss the economics behind this $51 billion bash that is meant to highlight Russia's sense of its own cultural, political, and moral standards, which, unlike the West and America in particular, respects sovereignty of others and does not seek to impose its values. Then we'll look into the peace talks underway between the Pakistani government and a Pakistan Taliban-nominated delegation in Islamabad. The director of the South Asian Center at the Atlantic Council, Suja Nawaz, the author of Cross Swords, Pakistan, Its Army, and the Wars Within, joins us to discuss attempts underway to end a decade-long insurgency through talks initiated by Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif. We will explore the conditions laid down by the government and look into resistance from the powerful army whose soldiers have died in Taliban attacks across the country. Then finally, we'll get a profile of New Jersey's controversial and embattled governor, Chris Christie, from an award-winning veteran New Jersey journalist, Robert Ingle, the author of The Soprano State, New Jersey's Culture of Corruption, and Chris Christie, the inside story of his rise to power. We will discuss the scandals dogging the likely Republican presidential candidate, who is taking a hit in recent polls from the negative publicity of bridge closings and alleged strong-arm tactics and political retribution over development projects and endorsements. And joining us now is Clifford Gaddy, who is a senior fellow at the Center on the United States and Europe at the Brookings Institution, specializing in foreign policy and global economy and development. He's the co-author with Fiona Hill of Mr. Putin, Operative in the Kremlin, and co-author of Bear Traps on Russia's Road to Modernization. And his forthcoming book is Russia's Addiction, The Political Economy of Resource Dependence. Welcome to Background Briefing, Clifford Gaddy.
My pleasure.
And I imagine that Vladimir Putin, who's putting on this big party prep for himself and Russia, I suppose, he's already getting some pretty negative press. There seems to be a kind of petulance on the part of the Western press there, reporting on the brackish brown water in hotel bathrooms, tweeting about various other nightmares. What's your sense of whether or not this will end up having two narratives, the domestic one that's celebrating a great success and an international one that's sort of churlish and critical?
I think you're right. I think on the first point, the domestic narrative, in my mind, there's no question that this will be portrayed, and probably legitimately so, as a great event for Russia. Of course, it'll be all the better if Russia wins a lot of gold medals, and there's a lot of pressure on their athletes to do it, more even than in perhaps other countries that host the Olympics. There always is that element. But for Russia, this is really quite important. And believe me, Russians, almost all Russians, really, is only, with the exception of a very narrow segment of the population, are quite proud of this. And I think, as far as Russia is concerned, it will be a success for Putin. They won't see it so much as a success for him as a success for the country. And how it's portrayed internationally, well, I guess that's anyone's guess. Maybe when the actual sporting events begin, there will be more focus on the Olympics as the Olympics, less room for the political commentary that we've seen so much of leading up to the Olympics. As you say, a great deal of negative commentary and negative portrayals of Russia, of Putin, of Sochi.
And stray dogs seem to have been getting a lot of press lately for reasons I'm not entirely sure. Have you been to Sochi at all?
I have a couple times, actually, only to have meetings with Putin, so I never really had a chance to look around the city and be a tourist there.
Well, tell us about your meetings with Putin. That doesn't happen often and to a lot of Westerners, so do you mind?
No, it was interesting. I'm in a group that for a number of years now, the Kremlin wants to somehow engage with Western specialists on Russia, and so they invite a group of us from around the world to come there, meet with people, including having a dinner with Putin. I remember the first time we came to Sochi, because they've only rarely been in Sochi, where he has the presidential residence. It was quite dramatic after the dinner. Contrary to the previous practice, Putin stood up and said, well, why don't you join me for cocktails on the terrace at the presidential residence, not the building we were in, the presidential residence, and we can overlook the have a nice view of the Black Sea. So we all went over there. This happened to be the late summer in that summer when Putin first appeared in photographs, bare-chested, riding on horses, diving in icy Siberian rivers and so forth. And believe me, when you got close to him, you could see this was not Photoshopped material. This guy was quite bulked up. He could barely, and I don't even think could, button the top button of his collar. He was so pumped up. It's been interesting just to observe him at close hand, and my colleague Fiona Hill and I tried to portray some of that in this book we wrote about Mr. Putin, the operative in the Kremlin.
Well, Clifford Gaddy, of course, the operative in the Kremlin in many ways asks these questions about whether or not his prior experience in the KGB, where he was not, it was relatively speaking a fairly minor official, whether that has become his MO in terms of running this vast country. And a lot of critics basically say that he is maybe he's not particularly capable of advancing Russia because so much of his focus seems to be on diminishing the United States. Do you think he has that mindset?
The first part, that his methods and way of operating inside of Russia and abroad, by the way, I think definitely derived from the skills that he developed as a KGB case officer, as he puts it, dealing with people, working with people on a one-on-one basis mostly. As for the point that somehow his goal is to act against the United States, or indeed his focus is on the United States, I think that's not really true. His focus is on Russia. He really doesn't care about anybody else, except to the extent that he portrays them as being adversarial towards Russia, trying to undermine Russia's, as he thinks of it, fated historical destiny to become a great power. And he's put it in this, it's a defensive mindset. He's put it in this way, that imagine what Russia would be today if we had not had wars and revolutions. And he, in fact, implies that outside forces have forced Russia into wars and revolutions in order to prevent it from realizing its destiny. I think he firmly believes that, certainly believes that forces outside of Russia are trying to undermine the country and its stability right now. And with that sort of almost paranoid, but certainly quite suspicious and defensive mindset, he, of course, pays a lot of attention to what the United States is doing, especially what he perceives it might be doing in areas relevant to Russia, both geographically and in terms of policy and economics.
Again, I'm speaking with Clifford Gaddy, who's a senior fellow at the Center on the United States and Europe at the Brookings Institution, specializing in foreign policy and global economy and development. He is the co-author with Fiona Hill of Mr. Putin, Operative in the Kremlin, and the co-author of Bear Traps on Russia's Road to Modernization. And his forthcoming book is Russia's Addiction, The Political Economy of Resource Dependence. Well, it does seem, though, that his latest moves, which have gotten a lot of attention and a lot of pushback, is this regressive anti-gay law, which has a kind of a very disgraceful kind of a vigilante component to it. That's gotten a lot of press. And I'm wondering, and xenophobia, racism, and homophobia seem to be playing well in amongst the Narod, and he does seem to be working that. And it seems to be also at play as a subtext in what's going on in the Ukraine. Do you think Putin could be successful in portraying Russian traditional values as being virtuous as opposed to European values being about gay marriage and other stuff that Russians find socially unacceptable?
The answer to that is yes. He is successful in that regard because that he is appealing to the majority of Russians. You can think of them as the silent majority. It's the heartland, it's the mainstream of Russia. There's just no denying that. the portion of the Russian population that is rather enthusiastically Western-oriented, that is willing and wants to have Russia adhere to the same values as Western Europe or at least part of the United States, that's a small sliver of the Russian population. They're concentrated in Moscow. They are certainly much more in contact with the Western media. They're more vocal. And as we saw in late 2011 and the early 2012, they're willing, some of them at least, to get out onto the streets and demonstrate. But the fact remains that the overwhelming majority, I would argue, of Russians would support Putin and his description of Russian traditional values, not the opposition's. So he's doing this out of pragmatic reasons. I personally do not, and I believe me, I've studied Putin for a long time. I personally don't believe that he's homophobic or particularly homophobic. I absolutely do not believe that he's a racist or certainly not an anti-Semite. But it's absolutely true that he, as the KGB operative that he was and essentially still is, uses such social forces for political ends and attempts to manipulate them as a social engineer would do. Those tendencies, the racism, the xenophobia, the anti-Semitism, the homophobia, those are deep in the Russian population, probably not so shallow in other countries as well. And it's a very dangerous situation because what Putin is trying to do is, as I said, manipulate them, use them for his political ends, but certainly not to unleash them. And in fact, I think he recognizes that one of the biggest dangers to the cohesion and the unity of the Russian people, which is his fundamental platform, the unity of all Russians are one, it would be to unleash ethnic tension, separatism, ethnic violence, racial violence, or religious divisions. And so he treads this narrow path, this very delicate balance between manipulating these feelings and these sentiments that are actually there. He's not creating them. They're there. And at the same time, trying to prevent them from getting out of control.
Well, but Clifford Gaddy, in many ways, it would seem that if you're not a racist and you're not a homophobe and you're not an anti-Semite, but you use all of those poisonous tools for political purposes because you're cynical, that strikes me as being even worse.
That may be true. Yeah, in some ways it is.
So
it would be easy for Putin to try to lead a campaign against homophobia, against racism, against anti-Semitism, do it in a very strong and serious and concerted way. He never does that. There are politicians, there are top officials in the Russian Orthodox Church who utter absolutely despicable statements in all of these regards, and Putin doesn't censure them. He doesn't vehemently protest against what they've said. He'll say, I would never believe that, but he doesn't conduct a campaign that would try to remedy that. And he's doing this for political reasons, because he's in the case of especially the homophobic policies, they are a pandering, if you like, to the Russian Orthodox Church, which is extremely conservative in this regard.
Well, one of the United Russia figures recently made an extraordinary statement in regard to Western criticism of the anti-gay laws, etc., saying that the West should be tolerant of, and who claim to be tolerant, should be tolerate. They should tolerate our values.
Yeah.
So that was quite a piece of mental gymnasium going on there. But
well, it may be, but you hear exactly the same thing, not only in the United States, but in every country in Western Europe. These aren't universally accepted values even in the West, and they are, to the extent that they've been accepted and could be considered a majority view and have been set in legislation to restrict especially anti-gay activity or propaganda or anything, this is highly controversial. So you have to, and of very recent date. So Russia, I'm not excusing this. I'm just simply saying that it is not strange that you have a strong majority in Russia that really feels that Putin is accurately representing, faithfully representing their point of view. The criticism with him is that he's not leading the country in a different direction and trying to modernize it in that regard and bring it into accord with the trends in the rest of the world.
Well, again, I'm speaking with Clifford Gaddy, Senior Fellow at the Center on the United States and Europe at the Brookings Institution, and co-author with Fiona Hill of Mr. Putin, Operative in the Kremlin. In terms of the other criticism that we hear about Putin, and that is, there was a very scathing book done by Masha Gessen about him that suggests, in effect, that he's the sort of capo di capo, that he regulates the oligarchs. And apparently there is a difference there because to what's happening in the Ukraine, where the kleptocratic family, Yanukovych family, the eldest son, the dentist, apparently basically shakes down the oligarchs and says, you know, I'm now your new 50% partner. But contrasting that, Putin allegedly sort of regulates the oligarchs and is kind of like a mafia boss. Is that a fair criticism?
Well, that's pretty much what my co-author Fiona Hill and I describe in our book about Putin. That is exactly his system. His system is based on very personal relationships, ultimately based on mutual corruption. In effect, the closest people around Putin are partners in his crimes. And his control over the oligarchs, these are private, these are some of the richest private business people in the world. He tolerates them. He works with them because he has control over them through various forms of blackmail. And he, when he came into office in the year 2000, he literally sat down with them and they came to a mutual agreement, a pact, a deal, an agreement that in part is a pure protection racket because Putin offered that he would protect them against the overwhelming popular sentiment that would like to just dispossess them completely of all their ill-gained riches, their stolen property from the Russian people, etc., as it's put, and probably do more than that, probably hang them from the nearest lamppost. Putin was their protector. He said, I'm not going to nationalize your property. I'm going to protect you from that. But more importantly, I'm going to protect you from each other. It happened that the oligarchs, at exactly that point, were in a fierce internal battle with each other. And we can note that there hasn't been no internal squabbles or serious strife between the oligarchs since. They're all in agreement. Khodorkovsky was part of that deal. Mikhail Khodorkovsky, the head of Yukos, was part of that deal. He's the only one of the oligarchs who sort of violated the terms of the deal, if you like, in many different ways. And he was punished for it. And none of the other oligarchs stood up for Khodorkovsky. They basically kept quiet, but in fact were saying that he broke the rules, so he has to pay. But that the control he has over the oligarchs is key to his whole system, because the counter service that they deliver to him in return for his protection, if you like, is that they have to not only pay formal taxes in fairly massive amounts, which they weren't doing before Putin came, but they also pay informal taxes. They have to place orders of their gigantic companies, place orders with subcontractors or input suppliers. They don't go looking around for the lowest cost supplier. You're not allowed to do that. You must look first and foremost to some of these big dinosaur factories that Russia inherited from the Soviet Union and which employ literally millions of workers who are Putin's core constituency. This is the heartland. This is the silent majority I referred to. These are the workers at these kinds of factories scattered across Russia. And so their jobs have to be protected, incomes have to be protected, and the oligarchs play a key role in doing that.
So, Clifford Gaddy, then, just in closing, do you think that this unprecedented $51 billion that allegedly been spent on the Sochi Olympics, will Putin get his value? I mean, he's got some problems. I mean, he seems to have handled foreign policy very skillfully in terms of his interest in Syria. I think many people think he totally bested the United States on that. But he does have a problem in the Ukraine. Even within the pro-Russian part of the Ukraine, they look like they're fed up with Yanukovych's kleptocracy. And so just in closing, do you think, short of a terrorist incident, is it going to work out for him, Sochi?
In his eyes, yes. In his eyes, yes. It served the purpose of helping to funnel some of these oil and gas rents, the oil and gas wealth, into a broader part of the population. That's described often as massive corruption. Now, that money is not going into somebody's pockets, part of it is. It's going into excess cost of building all these construction projects and so forth. It's therefore trickling down to these ineffective, inefficient, and unprofitable companies that are referred to. So this is part of the whole game. These are the so-called mega projects that Putin has used to drive the economy and provide job stability, income stability for the big part of the population that are not working at factories that are otherwise competitive and really sustainably viable in the international competition. The question, of course, is just how long can you continue to do that, especially as the Russian economy is not growing at the rate it was growing before, because oil prices are not soaring as high as they did before. So this will be considered, I'm sure, by Putin a success. What happens in the future is a different question.
Well, you know, just in closing, it seems like you're portraying a picture of the worst of capitalism and the worst of communism combined in terms of an economy.
Yeah.
Well, I thank you for joining us, Clifford Getty.
It's my pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Clifford Getty, who's a senior fellow at the Center on the United States and Europe at the Brookings Institution, specializing in foreign policy and global economy and development. He's a co-author with Fiona Hill of Mr. Putin, Operative in the Kremlin, and co-author of Bear Traps on Russia's Road to Modernization. And his forthcoming book is Russia's Addiction, The Political Economy of Resource Dependence. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back looking into peace talks underway between the Pakistani government and Pakistan's Taliban.